Hey, I'm John Horn. This week on Geffen Playhouse Unscripted, we are joined by
Josh Gad. And as much as he wants you to believe that none of it is scripted, I'm telling you that even my name is in a paper in front of me and I'm reading it. And everything that I'm saying right now, I'm also reading. This is very meta.
And it's phonetically spelled out, so you know how to say
all
Josh
phonetically.
Gad.
And for some reason, it's also in Spanish. Yo soy Josh Gad.
It's called Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. You could download it on the Podcast One app.
You can hear it on Apple Podcast.
Or at podcastone.com.
You are done. Thank you very much.
Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on mandate. Get it on. Take that, Drew. And thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for all you do, man.
So, listen, we were a couple shows ago talking about Descartes' error and all that stuff. And I was zooming through that. I wanted to sort of break it down a little more, if you don't mind. You know Descartes, right? He was a famous philosopher and a famous mathematician. He sort of developed what's called – he developed not just the Cartesian system of mathematics and geometric representations in space, but he also developed the Cartesian philosophy, which is this mind-body dualism. Right? Mm-hmm. We've sort of been under the sway.
What's dual? What do you mean, mind body dualism?
Like the mind and body are separated in some way. Like how do you reconcile mind and body? As though they're different. And you know, you could agree at least that just the way, you know, when you pull a bow across the strings of a violin, you're creating a sound that's dependent on the bow going across the. But it's kind of a separate thing that it creates. And
the bow is one thing, the violin's something else,
and then the sound it creates and how it's received and stuff, these are all different things. And so people start parsing out mind body. And the cogito, which in Latin was cogito ergo sum, in French, he said it because he was French, and it translates as that was the Latin, but the French was je pense donc je suis, I think, therefore I am. And his thing was, you know, he was a radical skeptic. And so what can you know? You can't really know anything, right? Except he finally distilled it down to you can know because you think. I exist because I think. And where Descartes' error really is that the mind and the body are kind of one thing and that perhaps he should have said, I think, therefore, God creates a form of matter that develops the capacity for thought. You know what I mean? Which is a more...
So what do you mean the mind and the body are one thing?
Well, in the sense that... everything we experience and everything about us is dependent on our biology. Right?
What do you mean dependent on our biology?
In the sense that it creates us. What's happening in the biology, the sum total of that is the thing, is us having experiences and us expressing behavior.
But I don't really get what he's getting at.
He thought there was a soul separate
from
the body.
Oh, he thought there was a soul.
Separate, something separate or something like that.
And your belief is what?
That's sort of a stupid, that's a foolish errand, fool's errand to try to separate the two.
So I believe that your experiences sort of create you and your thinking.
Yes, but I would argue that a big piece of that experience and what that is with other people.
Mm-hmm.
So so our experiences, our consciousness, our self is all kind of co-created with other people, which is something people don't
know. You know what it does? You know what I have with it, with other people, is I have a validation, negative and positive.
Huh?
I have people.
Yeah.
That I interact with, who essentially flatline. I see them make the same mistakes, get frustrated by the same errors,
it's on them.
Obfuscation and externalization, and everything like that.
Yeah.
And then I have these guys, like I tell you about Kevin Hench, who was not doing well at all, and I see him flourishing now.
Maybe there's something genetically different about him. Maybe there's some endowment that's different.
Well, he was not successful for, you know, the first 35 years of his life. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how much is genetic unless it kicks in at some point. But
is it the kicking in or just the, you know, genetics and the environment lined up at a certain point?
Like I don't know. He and I have had many, many, many conversations about life, about success, about discipline, about, you know, sort of what it takes to overcome adversity and achieve and out.
Did he feel like he did that?
Beating the odds. He feels like he's done it. Okay.
So it wasn't just he had this ability, he started working, and finally it paid out. It was that he had to overcome some stuff.
No, we talked every step of the way through it. He understood it. He would quote back things I said to him many years ago, little weird examples of what it takes to over whatever. Mm-hmm. And he set out to apply that to himself.
Yeah.
He took all these lessons and these trials and tribulations and overcoming adversity and he went, I'm going to imbibe all
that. This is, as long as we're in the sort of philosophical realm, that's what the Stoics said we should do. The Stoics were really all about you. It's all about you and with your choices.
Yeah,
you should become a Stoic. You should read my friend. We should get Ryan Holiday in here, Chris. He would really like Ryan.
I totally agree. Let's do it.
Have you thought about that before? I mean,
yeah, just now.
This kid wrote a book about the Stoics. It's sort of a modern rendition of why Stoic philosophy has meaning today.
I don't know what the Stoics are.
I've weirded out that I haven't thought of this until now. But you would.
Sorry, I have a lozenge because my voice is going.
Just trust me. It's.
I don't know what the Stoics.
Stoics was a group of Greek philosophers. Marcus Aurelius was sort of the ultimate sort of version of that. He was emperor, obviously, but he had this. Life is about a daily practice and making choices and choosing to live a certain kind of life in a certain kind of way. And Ryan wrote a book called The Obstacle Is the Way, which is exactly what you're talking about. How overcoming the obstacle is what gave them what they needed to do.
1,000 million percent.
Chris, let's get him that book. Call Ryan to get Ed on the book. Will you read it? Can we get it on Audible?
I need it on Audible.
Get it on Audible for me,
well,
please.
Actually, I don't need it, but everyone else I know needs to read it except for Kevin Hench.
No, because he goes through all these historical examples of people that fit or have used.
I bought into this years ago, but the thing that Kevin Hench quotes back to me all the time that it's not one of my top teners, not even a top 100 for me, but.
Yeah, because yours are so genius.
Well, after I'm gone.
To be fair.
You'll go back and examine some of the things I said and people will marvel. Many will weep openly in the streets, in the town squares, while they ring the bells from every bell tower.
Big bad Adam.
I always tell. There's a story that I told him, and the story was basically the...
you're sounding like the Brothers Grimm now.
The cough. You hear the pan flute in the background? It's the coffee
there
mug.
Once was
in
an
the,
ugly duckling.
The coffee mug in the footwell of the Zuzu Trooper.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And I always just said I had this habit of leaving in the morning with my coffee mug. I didn't have a commuter mug. I, to this day, don't. I like my coffee mug, and I don't like to transfer it. I just walk it right out. And when I was done, I would oftentimes just throw it on the floor because I didn't want it rolling around the seat, and I didn't want it to break. I'd throw it on the floor, the footwell of my Zuzu Trooper. Mm-hmm. I was living with my roommates up in La Cañada. And each time I'd get out of the car and I'd look at the mug, and I'd have this little dialogue for myself, which is, you know, go get the mug. And then I'd think, what's it hurt? There's a mug in the house. And then I'd go, get the mug. It's going to get all stained and you're going to have to clean it. And I'd go, yeah, but so what? It's sitting there. I'd go in the house, take a nap. And then I'd go, but get the mug because tomorrow when you get the mug, you'll come out with the mug. Then you're going to throw it down. Then you're going to clank together. And at a certain point, I just went, I spent more time thinking about this mug than it would have taken to get the mug. So I just got the mug. And from that point on, I just went, if you're stopping and thinking about something, it's done.
This
will get it.
Forever be known as the parable of Corolla, Azuzu, and the mug.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Hench tells me three times a year, I always think about that, and I always act on it.
You know what's
that.
Interesting to me? I had a self-conscious sort of experience that's sort of, I think, related to this. I had some extra time before I had to see patients yesterday, in fact. And I ended up spending a half an hour thinking deeply about four of the cases that I was about to see. I mean, really sitting and thinking about them very carefully. And I found it sort of refreshing/renewing. I'm like, oh, I got the time to do this. Thank God. Then I thought, wow, that takes a certain amount of discipline to do that and sit and really think hard, really focus and think hard about these people and their history and what I want. I mean, I spent a half an hour in deep, deep thought about it. And I thought, man, there was a time when that kind of thing was hard. Mm-hmm. And now it's just natural. Is that the same kind of zone we're talking about?
It's a zone of...
Because I wouldn't have naturally done that at 22 or 24 even.
It's just but a now zone
it's like,
of...
No. Now it's like it's almost rewarding.
Just break these habits and then have the new habits become habits.
But I'm saying this is the new habit. I was broken out of it by my training. My training just traumatized me to the point where I had this habit.
Yeah, I don't know. But I get great satisfaction watching him be incredibly fruitful. Mm. And I get great satisfaction in him identifying me as one of the primary sponsors of this fruitfulness, even though he doesn't kick back any money. He did buy breakfast. And
you're gonna get, old man.
I find it insanely satisfying. And the other thing that everyone should know, those who are constantly fighting this process, is it's this snowball going downhill, gathering more snow. It has a momentum to it.
Well, that's kind of what I was talking about just now.
Once
that's
you start figuring this stuff
out, it's
rewarding, yeah. And you start speeding up.
Yeah.
You get deeper into it. And by the way, you can go the other direction and just drift further out into space.
And let me just, again, I want to emphasize my point here because I think you're missing it a little bit, is that the ability to focus is a discipline. To really focus is something that comes.
I agree.
Yeah, it's hard to do that when you're younger, especially as a male. But when you can really focus, I mean, you can use the instrument and just focus it in. That has a rewarding sort of quality to it.
That's
really what I was talking about. Not that I was in discipline of reviewing cases and stuff. It's just the focus I was able to give with ease, I feel like would have been hard in my 20s.
Well, that's why you start the process in your 20s.
Yeah,
but you don't shrug it off and start playing video games. That's the focus.
Speaking of snowballs, if you're wondering how to get funding for a small business, you go at Cabbage with a K. Help small business owners get flexible funding right away. And you can do it right away without the headaches of a traditional loan. That means you can apply online or from your phone. That's crazy. A loan from your phone with no waiting in line, no scanning of documents, no tracking down financial statements. You just go to cabbage.com on your computer or your phone, and you will only pay for the funds you actually use. Cabbage with a K have supported over 100,000 small businesses with $2.9 billion in funding out there. What I want you to do is go to Cabbage, KABBAGE.com/Drew. There's no cost to apply. And as an Adam and Dr. Drew listener, when you qualify for funding, you will get a $100 Visa gift card. $100 when you're qualified just for applying, and you will only use the funds you only pay for the funds you actually use. That is Cabbage with a K, KABBAGE/Drew.
All right, here's a question on line 5.
Yeah.
William?
Hey, guys.
Hey there.
Thanks 46. For taking the call. I appreciate it.
You Santa Barbara, what's going on?
Yeah, I'm calling about my pop. He's got pretty severe back pain, and he's getting scheduled for surgery. And when I think about his situation, I think about what both of you guys say. I know Drew is pretty much almost always opposed to back surgery for pain.
For pain, yeah, I'm for it. It should be limited to people that have motor difficulties, something going on from a motor standpoint. In other words, you're unable to move a limb or you're getting muscular atrophy, then you have to go. Then you need the surgery. But doing it for pain, again, it depends what the lesion is. I would want to know exactly what it is. But for the most part, surgeries for pain are as likely to make it worse as better.
Yeah, that's my concern. They actually, the surgery they want to do, his pain is in his back. The surgery they want is in his for his hip. And I don't...
What do you mean? What do you mean? Whoa, hold on a second. What do they want to do to his hip?
They want... He has back pain, and they want to do hip surgery.
Well,
I don't have more details.
That's fine. If he needs a hip replacement, he's going to need that anyway. And if his hip is that messed up, in other words, if it's bone on bone there in the hip joint, that's going to mess his back up too. So what they're trying to do is not do back surgery and trying to repair his hip and see if that helps him with his back. That makes sense. And the hip surgeries,
I'm glad I asked that.
Yeah, hip surgeries don't end up with people on opiates. Hip surgeries, they're up the next day, they're off pain meds in about 5 days, and that's that, and off they go.
So well,
the back pain from opiate withdrawal, in my opinion, It's back and leg pain, and it really is sort of a restless leg. I was thinking about this yesterday. It's kind of a restless leg syndrome. Mm-hmm. You know what that is?
Yeah.
They get this pain and want to move their legs around. Heroin addicts in full-blown withdrawal get this tremendous pain down their legs. And I used to give them Parkinsonian medication, and it would get a lot better, which confirmed to me that it's a restless leg type
syndrome. Well, I notice for my junky friends, it's like a foot tap. It's like a never-stopping slide.
It's leg restlessness,
But it's a manifestation of what's going on in their brain.
No, I think it's actually – I disagree. I understand that's what's going on in their brain, but it's in their spinal column. There's actually a weird imbalance there, and so if you straighten that balance out, it gets a little better.
But where's the spinal column attached?
I know, I get you.
No, what I'm saying is, like, these guys were the guys that were always smoking cigarettes, always drinking a cup of coffee, always tapping their foot, always, you know.
So sympathetically turned on. The sympathetic nervous system is – you're the opposite of that.
Right. Yeah.
You're parasympathetic dominant.
I waited my whole life to try Vicodin. Yeah. I tried it. It didn't taste – it made me weird. Yeah. I didn't like it. I didn't feel high. Like, it was boring. I'll see you at the liquor store, Vico. The point is this. It's just – that Vicodin with me felt – you know, look, I'm not a lightweight and I'm not uptight. You give me something, feels good, I'm into it. Yeah. Vicodin was like, ugh. So nothing. I don't know if that has to do with the way I'm wired.
Well, it's your genetics and the way you're wired both. That's it.
But you bring up a good point, which is why does everybody who has back surgery get strung out on this stuff and everyone who gets elbow surgery, shoulder surgery, hip surgery, knee surgery doesn't get strung out on this stuff?
As necessarily, because the back pain is chronic withdrawal and hyperalgesia. And the withdrawal from opiates is expressed in back and leg pain.
Right.
Yeah. What I'm saying is part of that is a dopaminergic imbalance in the spinal column that causes this restless leg-like picture. So,
right. So, and how do we tell you you're not in pain?
I know. You are in pain, but it's not going to get better from the opiates, not going to get better from the surgery. Then they're like, but it's okay. No, then that's your addiction then. If you insist on the opiates, even though I'm telling you, here's how I know somebody's addicted. I go, this is making you worse. It's not helping. Well, I got to have it. Okay. Right. Well, now that's drug addiction.
Sure.
That's what's telling you you got to have it now.
All right. Let's talk to Bree. Bree, 35, Arkansas.
Hi.
Hey.
So I have a question.
Okay.
I have 5-year-old twin boys, mm-hmm. and one of them has been going around a lot, at least recently, just readjusting his crotch constantly. Mm-hmm. And I just have this memory of being in my sophomore English class, and this boy just always had his hand down his pants. And I have a brother that does it too. He'll be looking you in the eye having a conversation and just full on hand down there adjusting. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to make like a big deal about it because I think it could just be, you know, I'm 5, I'm kind of figuring things out. Plus there's the whole twin thing, so there's the two of them and it creates this kind of furor of funny. We're really big into the body.
Well, are they, is he doing this thinking it's funny?
No, sometimes it's funny.
Okay, you know, so he does think it's funny.
Kind of the bummy stuff. But other times, it's not. It's just he'll be going about his own business, and it's kind of like a pull, like maybe it's an itch. You know, so it's kind of like, okay, we're making sure we're wiping really good, we're cleaning really good. And I just don't want it to be a thing that he's super comfortable with because it's so off-putting. Like I just, like I said, I'm 35, and I remember this kid in my sophomore class. And
okay, so what Bree doesn't know is men are doing this all day. They're just doing it on the DL. They learn to hide it from
they will, like, look at
you. I understand. I understand.
Or the face.
I'm wondering you're wondering what's going on with Bree, right?
A little bit. I mean, I understand both sides. I understand your son's doing this.
You want him to stop.
You want him to stop.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's a weird extra energy she has toward it because that's the kind of stuff from the 10th grade that you're supposed to just throw in the dustbin of your memory somewhere and just sort of who cares and whatever's up with that guy and he's working at a Walmart right now, you know.
Right.
But it's
traumatized you a little bit. So
you're not supposed to have long-lasting effects. Now, Mr. Gregory failing me from driver's ed, that's something I should hang on to.
The rest of your life.
Oh, for sure, from the 10th grade. My love of automobiles? Of course. That's a big thing.
Is he still alive?
I hope not.
You got to go back and show him your Trans Am trophy.
Oh.
Wouldn't that be good?
Trans-Am trophy.
Chris, can you find this guy?
He's dead.
I guess my thought is that it could be off-putting to people if it becomes
What we're getting at is two things.
You're getting at it from just a purely sort of simple dynamic.
Right,
which is he doesn't want to be doing that in front of other people. And so,
that's
of course, it's off-putting. On the other hand, this is a five-year-old. It's nothing wrong with weaning him off the
wiener. You want to shape his behavior. You want to say, I know we've laughed at this. It's not funny out in the world. And just this is your private area. And people don't do that in public. Just wait till you go to the bathroom or when you're in your bedroom. Or just advise him. That's all. But don't – if you come at it with a ton of energy – you're going to traumatize him.
But Bree, where are you getting your energy from this guy in the 10th? Was it the 10th grade?
Sophomore, I think, 10th grade.
Why was it so difficult for you?
I wouldn't say that it's difficult. I just think that, I picture my son in an interview or something doing that. It's like, that's not someone I would want to hire. And he just was so casual about it.
What?
Bree, where's your dad? Anything we need to know?
No, honestly, no, my dad is good.
This one kid who you had no relationship with.
No, I mean, I went to a really small school. I knew him for a long time. I just sat directly behind him in English class. I mean, he wasn't adjusting himself. Like, his hand was down his pants.
He was masturbating?
No. Nope, it was just so casual, just sort of sitting there.
Going Al Bundy.
Like I said, my brother does the same thing. Like, it's just like a pull and adjust. Like you said at the beginning, like, you know.
Hold on, let me talk to Drew.
I'm a little confused.
It's a weird thing, because it's like, it's kind of a weird thing to notice on your brother.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't sort of care. Your brother should be 37 years old or whatever. Like, and it's to keep getting back to this kid you went to high school with, 10th grade.
It's something. I wonder if it's just, things growing up, certain images and certain smells and certain songs, just to kind of get in your, get under. This is just one of those things for her for some reason. It's almost like, you know, what she's got is, you know, there are things when you're growing up that evoke disgust that shouldn't, but they just do.
Mm-hmm.
And this is for her that. And she's disgusted, right? Is that the feeling? What's her name?
Bree.
Is disgust the feeling?
No. Honestly.
Yeah? What?
No, I wouldn't say it's disgust. Like I just said, it's off-putting, you know?
Yeah, okay.
That's all.
Are you married?
I am, yep.
What's your husband think of this stuff?
I think he thinks it's just, you know, maybe like a cleanliness issue, like he's itchy.
It's just a pragmatic issue. He just has a feeling, so he pulls on himself.
Is there something going on with you? Are you deeply religious, or would you call yourself uptight or anything like that?
I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm a Mormon. Feel like we've been really open about bodies. It's not a masturbation issue. I'm not worried about that. Like I said, he's five.
Yeah, I get it. All right. This is just something
just
that
something.
You have
yeah,
some something. Energy to. And, the truth is somewhere between you and him.
And just,
you got a little extra energy here.
Maybe just hand it over to your husband to help him shape the behavior a little bit.
Hand it over.
Good deal.
And
good deal.
The brother part's a little bit weird. Your brother's about your age?
He's younger. He's 4 years younger.
Did he ever traumatize you in any way at all?
Nope.
You sure?
Okay.
Well, he should have, because you got whatever residual effects are.
No, I'm just wondering, your parents like put you in the bathtub together till you were too old or something or
no.
anything? No. Okay.
Right. No.
Okay. I mean, nothing, I'm not saying anything bad. I'm just saying something that just was a little too much accidentally. Kinda.
Well, I guess the religion is about the most we could get out of that one.
Okay. I don't think that was it.
No, but I don't ask everyone about their religious convictions.
That's true.
I don't ever ask
anybody you're worried is being uptight, you always bring that up.
Yeah. Well, no. I don't know. Well, I always bring I mean, you guys have sat there. You don't hear me ask people their religion very often.
I haven't.
Or ever.
Don't think.
I'm not yes anding.
Okay.
I haven't.
All right.
So, and I get it. She was uptight and it begged the question, but she's a very devout person.
Okay. It's funny. I didn't get the uptight from her. It's weird.
There's the fact the fact that I just started going down the religious road with her meant something was tingling
in
me.
I know that you heard it and saw it. I don't disagree with that. You did. I did not.
I'll tell you about Simply Safe. You
Please
should
do.
Hear and see Simply Safe. Protecting your home should be easy. In the past, it wasn't. Installation appointments, drilling holes, getting locks, or I should say locked into contracts, man. You don't want to do that. You need Simply Safe, comprehensive, professionally monitored home security online. It's easy, super easy. Peel and stick, put your system up, do it in about 20 minutes. Again, drilling holes, pulling wires, making a mess. No, each system is a security arsenal. Entry and motion sensors, high-def security cameras, everything you need to keep your family safe. CNET called it the most comprehensive and easy-to-use protection and also gave it editor's choice for home security in 2014. So,
you can use this for monitoring babies, elderly parents.
This is it all.
Yeah.
It's simply
and it travels and the batteries last forever. Come on.
Yeah, 10 hours. I mean, 10 hours.
10 years.
10 years.
Yeah.
A little difference there. Order today and be protected by the end of the week. Get 10% off right now when you go to Simply Safe, two I's, S-I-M-P-L-I, simplysafeadam.com, and get your system. That's simplysafeadam.com. All right, Drew.
Yeah.
You want me to read you something? I think you'll find interesting.
There you go.
All right. You ready?
Yeah.
So.
You've never read to me before.
I know. Well, I can read now. That's awesome.
Is this going to be our bedtime ritual now?
I had, let's see. So, Earth Day was a couple of Saturdays back.
Yeah.
And I had these Earth Day predictions from the speeches given.
Okay. Oh, I saw. Yeah, I looked over your shoulder. I saw a little bit of that. Okay, got it.
So, just with you and I, what we grew up with.
Yeah.
Harvard biologist George Wald estimated that civilization will end within 15 to 30 years unless immediate action is taken against problems facing mankind.
Now, was this today's, this recent Earth Day, or is this stuff we had to listen to in the 70s?
This is today's.
Because we heard that shit all the time in the 70s.
Well, you're on to me, because I'll read you a couple more, and then I'll tell you when this is from.
Oh, I see.
Senator Gaylord Nelson, Drew always knows how the bit works, wrote...
I just know what's factually true.
Oh, but take a look.
I don't think in terms of a setup and a joke. I think in terms of what I'm thinking.
You think in terms of shitting on points.
Yes.
Understood.
That's right.
No, you want to go back. You think I go back and have a hearty laugh at my screwball mom who was worried about microwave ovens and brown sugar being much better for you than white sugar and honey.
Remember,
that
was going to kill us, but there was going to be famine worldwide.
Yep.
For sure. There was overpopulation was a result in massive war, nuclear war, eventually within the next year and a half.
Famine too, yeah.
And then famine. And we've been fed a load of crap about the end of times for a long time.
Yeah. Stanford's Paul Ehrlich sketched out his most alarmist scenario in his Earth Day issue of The Progressive, assuring readers that between 2020 and 2029, I did the math, some 4 billion people, including 65 million Americans, would perish in the Great Die-Off.
Now, is this something they predicted this last Earth Day or the 70s Earth Day?
This is the first Earth Day from 1970.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And we were fed that a constant diet of that stuff.
All right.
Yeah.
Can I tell you this, though, Drew?
Tell me.
When we go back and look at what we're doing now with many of the alarmist everything that we're doing now, I think I'll have a heartier laugh a few years from now than even at my poor mom and her stupid doomsday stuff.
The frightening
out of
thing,
fossil fuels and blah, 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 blah.
I was
blah,
one of those
blah,
people.
Right.
The frightening thing about, I came back from college. I announced to my parents that we have about 3 more years of oil left and that's it. We better come up with something immediately because it's over. It is over. And they looked at me and laughed.
Right.
But anyway, I hope we have that laugh, because that's the scary thing about these scenarios and experts telling us these things is that one of these days they're going to be right. So I hope we have a good laugh.
Well, are we?
I think we will. I think you're right.
I don't listen to experts about anything anymore because they've
because we had all the crap from the 70s that made us jaded.
Well, first off, I feel like they've all turned in their expert cards by having a hissy fit over everything all the time. And now,
whenever people's hair is on fire, don't listen. Really, don't listen.
Right. All right. A happy note to go out on. Look for Mr. Heatmiser. And don't listen to Mr. Heatmiser. You remember what Mr. Heatmiser looks like?
No.
Show me a picture of Mr. Heatmiser.
I'll listen to Mr. What was it?
Deliberte?
Your biology teacher?
He failed me, too.
Yeah, same.
He failed me.
I'll listen to him.
He first semester of the 10th grade, and then Mr. Gregory failed me second semester. No, we're getting a picture of Mr. Heatmiser.
Oh, my God. Oh, it's your favorite. Looks like a Sid and Marty Croft or something. Oh, no, this is something like came out of the reindeer camp, right? That's
Hold on. First off, everyone just fall their knees and bow to the greatness of Ace, because Dr. Drew said when somebody's hair is on fire, you shouldn't listen to them.
Yeah.
And it took me 1.7 seconds to conjure one of the only images of the past 40 years where the guy has a hair that is made of fire.
I will bring you another one immediately. In the cartoon Hercules, Hades' hair is on fire.
All right. Well, okay, Mr. Greek mythology. Are you done crying my points? Now, would you marvel at Mr. Heatmiser with his head on fire?
That was I'll give you Hercules only like 10 years ago. This is out of the 70s again. was it one of those stop action cartoon kind of
things? Yeah. You know, Mr. Heatmiser, Mr. Snowmiser?
No.
You know, I got to sit here and listen about all your Greek mythology, but it turns out you don't know squat, dude.
Not about when it comes to...
Well, not about the important shit.
Snow monsters.
No, no, you don't. No, you don't.
Let's get out of here.
All right. Limited time t-shirts. I agree with me. Ooh. And the hats and the mugs and the posters. You get that at adamcarolla.com. It's limited time. And you can go to corolladrinks.com. Say hi to Lynette. You can also check out the Town Hall, Reasonable Doubt, me and Garrigus. Oh, hold on. True, you got a true car?
True car, you'll see what others paid for a market, the car you want in your market. You'll see the scattergram of prices, and then you'll lock in that price, and you'll register, and you will see when you register, forget the locked-in price. Before you lock it in, you'll see real pricing on actual inventory. So you know when you do lock in that price, you can feel confident when you show up, you're showing up with a certificate for actual inventory for a car that's on that True Car certified dealer's lot. And you can expect, like most True Car users, to save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. There have been over 3 million cars sold by the over 13,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide. And when you're ready to buy new or used, just visit True Car. We love these guys. They back you on chassis. I've been impressed by these.
Oh,
guys. Yeah, you've got a nice car.
Oh, it's the easiest way to
find
a car.
That's right. No. Just you walk in that lot with that piece of paper, and it's actually pleasurable to buy a car for a change, and confident. Some features not available in the States.
All right, Drew, plug your junk.
Go to drdrew.com. Check out the family podcast there. Me and Maria Bamford, Dr. Drew podcast this week. Check it out, please.
So until next time, Adam Carolla, Dr. Drew saying mahalo.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well...
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.